Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com, accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast, coming to you from Santa Barbara, California. Sort of opening up around here. Still, you know, people walk around in masks, of course, but restaurants are starting to open. Starting to seem a little bit more normal, but boy, it is getting old, isn't it? I'll tell you what. Listen, before we start with the content of today's show, I do want to point out that there is a website called wealthformula.com that is the home base for Wealth Formula Podcast. This is where you'll get a bunch of the resources, including, by the way, the video for this week's podcast, if you want to watch it in the video version. Some of you are doing YouTube anyway, but if you're listening to this right now and want to get the replay of the video part, go to wealthformula.com and look for the link there. As for today's show, you know, in our last Wealth Formula Network video conference, and I should point out Wealth Formula Network is our private community, which you can check out for yourself if you'd like at wealthformularoadmap.com. It starts with a course and then it moves into this community and the Facebook and also via biweekly video conference meetings. But anyway, there's a common question that came up again, and I think it's one that pretty much all of us have at this point, which is, well, if the economy's in the tank or headed in the tank, why does the stock market seem to be so tone deaf to what's going on? I mean, absolutely. I listen, it's the elephant in the room, right? Well, I'll tell you, I don't claim to know the answer to that, but let me give you my two cents. Let me give you my armchair economist look at this. And that is that, first, you know, fiscal and monetary policy are in full force. The Federal Reserve has been printing full time. Those presses are, they are on all night long, every day, full time. And they have been cranking out that money. In the meantime, we've added $1 trillion to the debt, to the national debt in just the last couple of months. The Federal Reserve has shown willingness to not only print and buy bonds and QE, but has also shown willingness to buy high-yield corporate bonds in the form of ETFs. Now, these are, of course, also known as junk bonds, literally, by doing this, picking winners and losers. And if they're willing to buy junk bonds, what's keeping them from buying S&P 500 ETFs? That's the question. And, well, some of you will listen to that and say, well, of course, there's one thing that prevents them from doing that, which is the law. Well, that may be true at this point, but to me, that seems like a formality, because if the ship starts sinking again, it seems not unlikely for this to occur, right? So if you're managing client money and you're moving a lot of money through the market, you know, because that's part of what's moving the market is, you know, the confidence of money managers, et cetera. What are you going to do? I mean, listen, if you missed a 40% recovery that came from the big dip in March, you might have gotten fired by now. I mean, if you got out of the market, you look kind of silly right now because we're back up 40%, even though we had a little bit of slide today. But instead, you know, rather than taking any chances, it might make more sense to just follow the money, so to speak. And that money is the money that is being printed by the Federal Reserve, or the money in the form of junk bonds that are being bought by the Federal Reserve. To me, frankly, this is where it's at. This is why stocks are doing as well as they are. I also think that a lot of people, frankly, even in the institutional money management space, really are not in touch with what's going on in the economy, and they still expect this V-shaped recovery. Now, you know, to say the least, the economy has significant challenges ahead, right? No one doubts that. However, remember that a crisis often brings opportunities. And frankly, these are the types of times when, you know, wealth is transferred the most significantly. People get rich, people get poor, and you want to try to make sure that you are on the receiving end of that. And as part of its arsenal, the government has provided substantial support to small business, and by changing the tax code. So it is really imperative that you know the changes that are going on. Now, I know some of you are saying, well, listen, I'm not a small business owner, so this is not really relevant to me. But I'll tell you what, understanding what's going on the ground will help you much better understand the realities of the economy and not be just fooled by, you know, some sort of phantom Dow Jones Industrial Average is continuing to rise. Listen, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to go on the limb and say, oh, you know, the stock market's going to crash. Maybe this will be some sort of new normal where the stock market continues to go up regardless of what happens in the real economy. But listen, I wouldn't take those chances myself. But anyway, the bottom line is understanding what's really happening in on the ground in the economy will really help you make some reasonable decisions. And for that reason, I've asked my friend Tom Wheelwright, who's my CPA, who is a sort of a very, very smart guy, to join us again on this week's podcast to explain the most recent updates to the tax code that happened last week. As you recall, Tom did a webinar and he was on the show just a couple weeks ago. But since then, there are new laws and they've been updated. And so what he's going to do when we come back is he's going to tell us exactly what is new, what has changed. And he's also going to tell us what he's seeing on the ground, as most of his clients are small business people, so you can get a dose of reality there as well. So when we come back, Tom Wheelwright.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast, well, he is very well known to our group. He is my CPA, Tom Wheelwright. He is also, you know, I guess you would, I mean, qualifies as a celebrity CPA, Tom. I mean, tax-free wealth, you know, rich dad advisor to Robert Kiyosaki, just a guy who can really explain the stuff and who knows the law better than anybody else. And we've had some changes recently, so we've got him back on because these are incredibly important issues. Tom, again, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Buck. Always good to be with your group. You know, a number of members of your group are clients of ours. And so we love your members. We love the people who are watching you and love what you're doing in the financial education area.
Yeah, and I should point out, you know, from the standpoint of this particular podcast, Tom is also doing this as a video as well. So what we'll do is we'll post the video. I mean, you can always see it on YouTube as well if you're following us there, but we'll put it on the website as well. But if you're listening in the car, like I know a lot of you do, you know, you can go back and watch this as well. But Tom, so, you know, you did a webinar literally just a couple weeks ago for us that, you know, was really helpful on the latest tax legislation. And then just like that, we already have some significant changes, you know, some very much for the better. Do you want to give us an update on that?
I do. And that's, you know, why we decided to do this, of course, is that the big changes, there were two big changes. The primary change is this, our favorite program right now is the PPP loan, right?
Yeah.
And then we had one other change that I want to get to, but let's talk about the PPP loan changes first, because
Before you actually talk about the changes, can you just give a 2-minute, you know, summary of what this PPP loan meant to do?
It's called the Paycheck Protection Program, and it's a loan that small businesses normally under 500 employees, although there are exceptions to that rule. Normally under 500 employees can get a loan of up to $10 million from through the SBA from their bank that is backed by the SBA. So it's a bank loan serviced by your bank. It is backed by the SBA. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and the qualifications, as you know, Buck, they're really simple.
A pulse, right?
Everybody qualifies, even though the SBA threatened people and Treasury threatened people, which is probably one of the worst policy comments I've seen in recent years. The reality is that the law is very clear that there's no requirement. Frankly, there's no requirement you're damaged. Now, what the Treasury said was that, look, if you can get capital other places, you shouldn't be availing yourself of these loans. So for a small business, that's a true small business, that's everybody. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second of all, there's a requirement for how you use the loan. And you can really only use it for three things. You can use it for payroll. You can use it for, and payroll includes things like contributions to 401k plans for your employees, and includes things like health insurance. Okay, so that's payroll. Then it also includes rent and mortgage interest, and includes utilities. Okay, so those are pretty much the three things. What the original CARES Act said was, look, you have 8 weeks from the time you used the loan. So you had 8 weeks. And the 8-week rule was from the time you received the money until to use the money. Okay, you had 8 weeks to use the money. The challenge, of course, is that there are a whole slew of businesses that weren't able to use the money, either because the government wasn't allowing them to open, or because they couldn't hire employees because the employees would rather be on unemployment because the unemployment was so good. Yeah. So Congress came back and said, okay, what we'll do is instead of 8 weeks, we'll make it 24 weeks. Mm-hmm. And 24 weeks is significant because the reality is that the amount of the loan was based on 2.5 months of average payroll. Mm-hmm. Well, so 2.5 months, that's approximately 10 or 11 weeks, and you've got 24 weeks to use it. You've pretty much got to be just about out of business to not be able to use this. So you're really probably going to be able to use all of it and not have to pay any of it back. However, there were a couple of other changes. One of the curious rules that the SBA came out with was this so-called 75-25 rule. And in the 75-25 rule, the SBA said you have to use it 75% for payroll, and you can only use 25% of it for utilities, rent, and mortgage.
Okay? That was the original.
Well, it's actually not the original, okay?
No.
In the original bill, there was no mention of how it was supposed to be used, okay, except for those three things, right? Mm-hmm. There was no 75-25 rule. This came in a regulation from the Small Business Administration. So then what Congress did this time is they said, well, we're going to change that. And we're going to make it 60-40. All right, we're going to make it 60-40. So 60% has to be used for payroll. One of the concerns with the way this new law was written, this revised law, it was a revision pretty much just revised as of the effective date of the CARES Act, right? So for most of it. So one of the curious parts of this is it appears in the law to be a cliff rule, meaning if you don't use at least 60% of it for payroll, you don't get it at all, the forgiveness.
Right.
Treasury and SBA have since come out and said, no, we're going to issue new regulations. And the intent is it's the 60-40 rule will apply just the way the 75-25 rule. So it'd just be a proportionate reduction. It wouldn't be an entire disallowance.
Right. So, right, basically, you know, if you went off of that, if you weren't exactly at 60%, maybe you used, 50%, then you just have a new baseline.
For forgiveness.
Right, for forgiveness.
Right. So if you use 50%, if it was a, 50-50, then, you might lose, you're going to lose some percentage of the forgiveness. Now, the other thing they did, though, is they extended the deferral. So, if you do have any that you haven't used up, you've got, under the original rule, you had 6 months before you had to start paying. Under this rule, you have 10 months. However, you don't have to start repaying it until your 24 weeks is up. Okay.
And there,
so if you also 24 have longer. Weeks, so 24 weeks, by the way, it's the earlier of 24 weeks or December 31st. So I don't know why that would even be in there because you have to get reasonably, you really have to get this loan by the end of June.
Yeah.
So the good news is there's still money out there. In fact, they're talking about repurposing it. And so because of that, there's like $100 billion still sitting out there. So if you have not gotten this loan, now here's something I'd really like to emphasize, Buck. I have had people tell me, clients tell me, oh, I'm not sure I should take this money. And, are they going to come after me? And we're talking about like even a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah.
Should I give it back? And I'm going, what? Here's the challenge. And this is the challenge I had with the old policy in the first place, right? Where we're going to put you in prison if you really didn't need it.
Right.
That, first of all, if you're under 2 million, that's absolutely not going to happen. It appears. They're not even going to question it. They're not going to audit it. Mm-hmm. And second of all, even if you're over $2 million, look, they would have to prove that you had easy access to capital otherwise, other than here. And how do we even know yet?
Yeah.
The challenge is we're seeing, I'm in Arizona, we're seeing we're seeing more cases of COVID-19 than we did when we were shut down. So we're actually having this huge influx. Our hospitals are concerned about being out of beds. Okay. So this is, we don't know what's going to happen. You saw in the market today, you saw this huge drop in the stock market. Why do you see that huge stock drop in the stock market? Because there's this resurgence of COVID-19 cases, and they're very concerned that, businesses are going to have to close down again. Where even if the government doesn't shut them down, the reality is if this thing gets really bad, worse than it is now, then you're going to see just people hesitant to go out. I know my wife and I, as an example, we're high at risk. And so we're very hesitant to go. We would never go out to dinner in a restaurant ever right now. So, you're going to see some challenges. And so that's why I say anytime you can get cash and have cash available, if you want to pay this back a year from now, pay it back. That's fine. You don't want forgiveness. You say, I don't need forgiveness. I'm not going to take that government money. Have it available. It's like having a line of credit. Why would you not want a line of credit? Which actually brings me, I want to talk, if we can, Buck, we have time, I'd like to talk about the two other loan packages that are available. You know, once we get through the PPP here, because this idea of I don't need the money because my business is doing well is premature.
Right.
It's completely premature. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
We think the world already fell apart. I don't think we've even seen the surface scratched on how the world's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
I really don't, because between the protests, the looting, the violence, you know, all of what's going on in the world, particularly in the United States, I think we're going to have some severe distress in the third and fourth quarter of this year. So can we go to one more piece of the
No rush at all. Yeah, absolutely.
So this is the big one, right? This is why they did it. But there's another one that people don't really know about.
Wait, and that's another, before you leave, are you leaving the PPP now?
Well, sort of, yes.
Because I have a question on that.
Go ahead.
There was one part that I know got a lot of people on social media were talking about, which I'm wondering if has changed. It's the deductibility of payroll.
Oh, yeah. So that has not changed yet.
So,
but let me explain why it probably will change. Okay?
Maybe explain what I'm talking about first. Yeah.
So here's, so I'm always saying Congress giveth and the IRS taketh away.
Right.
And that's pretty much what we have going on here. What happened was in the CARES Act, forgiveness of a debt would normally be taxable income, right? All income's taxable unless the government says it isn't. Well, the government in this case said it isn't.
Yeah.
So here's a specific example where the government in the law, in the legislation said, the forgiveness of this loan, you get a $2 million loan, that $2 million is not taxable. The IRS, in its infinite wisdom, decided that if this is not taxable, then that means that the payroll, the utilities, and the interest that allow it to be forgivable are not deductible. Now, of course, if you can't deduct the expenses, the net effect of that is making the income taxable.
Right.
So it's eliminating the benefit of being non-taxable because you're not getting the deduction. So what's the point? So in the HEROES Act, which is the proposed legislation by the House of Representatives, in their legislation, their next stimulus bill, they propose giving back that deductibility, okay, making it very specific. The reason the IRS didn't want to do that is because there's a lot of non-taxable income, and the general rule is if you have an expense that creates non-taxable income, you don't get to deduct the expense.
Right. Okay.
So that's a general rule. They didn't want that. They didn't want their application here kind of spoiling the whole basket.
Yeah. Right? I know business owners who are holding onto their money because they don't want to be taxed on it.
Right. You know, Right. Yeah, of course. Because you're going, wait a minute, if I have to hold out 40% or 50% in California, you're talking about 50% tax here. So you don't really have a $2 million loan. You have a $1 million loan.
Right.
Right. So because it, now the Senate, Republican controlled Senate, has pretty much said, yeah, the HEROES Act is just a pipe dream. However, one of the things to notice in I always read proposed legislation. And the reason is that if there's something in the proposed legislation that the other side wants, it's going to end up in the final legislation. And this is something the Republican Senate wants. Okay. Everybody wants this. The only reason I believe that it wasn't put in here into this revision was because it was already in the HEROES Act. Okay, so I fully expect that to come through. Mnuchin said today that we're gonna get at least $1 trillion of stimulus in the next package, which, by the way, has to happen by the end of June because of the unemployment running out, okay, the first part of July.
Right.
So you have to do this next stimulus package within the next several weeks. Otherwise, frankly, you've got social unrest that's fairly significant that could be the result of people not having money in their pocket, right? If you can't eat, what do? You go, you get it somewhere.
Yep. Right?
So that's a real, real issue that the government is focused on. So I expect that stimulus package to happen in the next several weeks. The taxability issue should be solved. We don't know for sure, but Treasury said it should, they want it solved. Frankly, they could solve it themselves, but you know, they want it solved. The reason they want Congress to solve it again is because they're worried if they solve it, then it will apply to a lot of other things besides just the PPP.
Okay? Got it.
Now, any other questions on PPP?
No, I think that's good. Let's move on to the next.
So let's go to this. There's another piece that nobody's talked about in this particular legislation. This was the correction to the PPP. Some of you might recall that in the original CARES Act, you could defer 50% of the employment taxes from payroll, which is basically the employer share. Okay, you could defer paying that over until the end of the year. Okay, unless you had a PPP loan. What this legislation did was eliminate that requirement. So you can have a PPP loan and still defer your payroll taxes. Mm-hmm. So again, I would urge people, think about your cash position, right? Business is all about cash flow. And think about your cash position. And you're not paying interest, you're not paying penalties. Now, would I set that money aside? Absolutely. I would only use it if I absolutely had to, because I know that I'm gonna owe it on December 31st, okay? But let's for sure make sure that whatever cash we can set aside, we set aside. So this is a actually significant benefit if you have lots of employees, because you're talking about basically 7.5%, mm-hmm. right, of your payroll. So if you only have $100,000 of payroll, you know, twice a month, right, that's still half of that. So it'd be $7,500 a month. And you times that by 6 or 7, you know, you're getting into some money that you could
use. But that's just a deferral, right?
It's just a deferral. It's just a postponement. It's just like, it's like having a, oh my heavens, the world's falling apart. I need cash.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other things I'd do first before using that money. Like I would be laying off employees, frankly, before I use that money. But I want you to know it's there because that was a change in that law. Okay. Yeah. So that is a possibility. So two other loans that I think, and I know you're really familiar with at least one of them, Buck, I think people should pay attention to. And not discussed, hardly discussed at all. The first one is the EIDL loan, Emergency Injury Disaster Loan, okay? Now, this is really interesting. I know a lot of people applied for a grant, okay? And the grant was, the way the SBA administered that was $1,000 per employee, but not more than 10,000, okay? That's how they applied that grant. So if you had 8 employees, you got $8,000. If you had 80 employees, you got $10,000, right? So that was that grant. Now, that grant, if you did not have a PPP loan, it's just that, it's a grant, okay? So you don't have to worry about paying it back at all. If you had a PPP loan, that grant reduces the amount forgiven under the PPP. It's still not, you still don't have to pay it back under the EIDL loan. You're paying it back now under the PPP loan, okay? I know that's confusing, but that's why you sit down with your CPA and walk through these numbers with them. Right. I mean, the CPA, your CPA is like your best friend right now. CPA and banker, two best friends right now in the financial world. What I found, and Buck, I don't know if you want to speak to this, but what your experience has been, the people you've talked to, but I'm finding that the if you apply for the grant, the SBA is routinely giving out the loans. And they're offering loans. And so you applied for the grant, and not only did you get the grant, but you're going to get a loan.
Well, you know, it's interesting in our case, and I don't know if you've noticed any of this, Tom, my friends in California who have businesses are getting their EIDLs. And in Illinois, my business friends, none of us have gotten our EIDL yet.
Interesting. See, because I've gotten the ones for my business.
Yeah. But
they're done. Be careful. By the way, anytime you sign a loan, make sure you read the loan provisions. There's actually one provision in this loan that I'm checking out. And here's what it appears to say. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer. That's why I'm getting it checked out. What it appears to say is that if you have this loan, until you pay it back, you have to apply to the SBA if you ever take money out of your company. Okay, that you have to actually ask the SBA for permission to distribute money from your company. So that's a really onerous provision. And frankly, if that's the way it ends up, I'm going to say no, right, to this loan, because I'm not going to ask the SBA every time I want to take money out of my own
company. Yeah, that's crazy. Right?
I'm okay if it says,
I mean, it's just a loan anyway.
Okay with not distributing this money.
Yeah.
I'm okay not distributing this money. I'm just not okay. And this does have very specific uses. Okay, you do have to use it for damage caused by the pandemic. Okay, sure. You can't use it for anything, right? But you can use it for PPE, right? I mean, a lot of people are having to buy masks and stuff like that, and you can use it for that. You can use it for equipment that you need to buy. You know, if you need to buy something for your office, or you need to pay for somebody to come in and clean your office, you can use it for that. So right. There's a lot of things you can use it for. You just can't use it. You couldn't take this money and go invest in real estate. Okay. That you can't do. So that's actually a pretty big number, because for a lot of small businesses, you know, what they looked at was they'll give up to 2 million, but in the law, it's up to 200,000. There's really no checking anything other than are you a real business?
Yeah.
So it's really a nice program if you're okay with what the loan says. It's a 30-year loan at 3.75%, and you've got a deferral period of a year on it. So it's a sweet loan.
I just wish I could get that.
It'll come. It'll come, Buck. It'll come. Yeah. Okay, the other loan. It's called the Main Street Funding, okay? It was originally intended, and this is a loan, not from the SBA, not through the SBA, but from the Federal Reserve. It's actually backed by the Federal Reserve. What's gonna happen is the Federal Reserve has set aside $600 billion, which is as much as they set aside, as Treasury set aside for the PPP, okay? $600 billion, and what the Fed's gonna do is they're gonna go buy these loans from the bank. So it's going to go on the Fed's balance sheet. So the Fed's taking all the risk, which of course the Fed has no risk because it has no responsibility to anybody, right? So it can just buy loans. It's just printing money at that point, right? So it's just printing money. But it was originally intended for those businesses that did not qualify for the PPP loan. However, it has been expanded because nobody was taking it on. They were too worried about the restrictions. So they're loosening restrictions. They're changing this program. And this is some pretty serious funding. And I would strongly suggest if you have any concerns about your cash flow, that this is a loan you ought to be talking to your bank about. Should I be applying for this Main Street loan? Would I qualify for this Main Street loan? Will you lend me the money? Now, here's what I've learned. I learned this the hard way. A small local bank is always your best bet. Always. The big banks, you know, with the PPP loan, they were like, oh, we'll take you if you're Starbucks. And then, you know, if you're Starbucks, then the SBA came and said, no, if you're Starbucks, you can't do this because you're a big company. You know, so it was bad with the big banks. But the small local regional banks, I know people that they got their loans, their PPP loans within a week. In the very first week that the program was out there, they got their loan. So if you, here's what I would suggest. This is just coming on.
What are the terms on that, Tom? The Main Street?
I don't know all the terms of it. I do suspect, though, that they're similar to the EID loan. Okay. It's going to be, it's a little bit going to be dependent on the bank, because they do have a little bit of risk where, in that $200,000 EID loan, the bank has zero risk. They have about, I think they have a risk of 5% on the Main Street. So they have a little risk. So, you know, the interest rates aren't going to be necessarily the same all the time. Your terms aren't going to be exact same, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. They keep changing the rules, Buck. And I'll tell you what, if you'd like, once the rules are fixed, we can come back and have a whole discussion.
Sure.
About the Main Street funding. My point about this fund is there's been a lot of disconnect with it, a lot of confusion. They're ironing it all out. So it's really not gone anywhere. So we have $600 billion sitting there. Well, what I think is going to happen is that they're going to get that ironed out. And then there's going to, when we get this new push of the pandemic, there's going to be a rush for it. So, you know, it's, as you know, Buck, the old adage is the bank will only lend you money when you don't need it.
Right.
Right. If you don't need it now, now's the time to get it.
Yep.
Now's the time to get it. You have good credit still. Your customers are still paying you, or your tenants are still paying you, whatever it is. Now's the time to get this. This is not just for employees. So unlike the PPP loan that is specific for employees, or the EIDL loan that has really super restrictions, this one, I think they're going to open it up to be a little broader in the usage, though we don't know exactly what that is quite yet.
Got it. Anything else on the laws and the changes?
Well, those are the three big loans.
Got it.
Okay, so we got the PPP, the EIDL, and the Main Street. Remember, there's still the... There, you still have the standard SBA loans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can get a standard SBA loan, a 7A loan. You can get an emergency, small, what they call a small loan, SBA loan. That's up to $1 million. That has a lot less restrictions on it. You don't have to collateralize your house and your mother. Okay. That's actually a reasonable loan document, that $1 million loan. So there are lots of funding opportunities. And I guess the point here is take advantage of the funding opportunities. If you decide down the road, a year from now, you don't need it, just pay it all back.
Sure.
I've not seen any provisions in any of these loans where there's a prepayment penalty.
Yeah.
So take the money, pay interest for a year or not, depending on the deferral period. And then, you know, if you don't need it, then pay it back.
I'm going to shift gears just a little bit, you know, because you have, in addition to all the knowledge on the tax side, I mean, your clients, you have a really good on the ground perspective of what's going on with small business. And when you look at, you mentioned the stock market dipped a little bit, but it had also recovered about 40% since its March lows. What does a real world look like right now in terms of, you know, business people that you're talking to?
You know, a lot of it depends on your industry and your location.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're on the East Coast, you're probably struggling, right? East Coast, particularly Northeast is, you know, they're reeling from 30,000 deaths in New York, right? That they're reeling from that. And so they're very, very cautious. We have members of our CPA network in Connecticut, New York, and what they report is everybody wears a mask. Everybody does social distancing. Everybody's cautious. They're very, very careful. Contrast that with Arizona. You go out for a walk in Scottsdale, Arizona, the bars are packed. The restaurants are packed. There's no social distancing and almost no masks. Okay. So you're taking your life in your hands, but the businesses are open, which right. is why we're seeing this huge influx of cases. But I think that's what's going on. The other part of it is, here's what's really interesting to me is I'm a member of a group of entrepreneurs that primarily they're e-commerce entrepreneurs. And they're reporting a booming business.
Sure.
I mean, they've never made so money. You know, from my friend Andy Tanner, who sells stock market training, to, you know, to my friends down in Austin who sell different kinds of e-commerce, you know, anything that's being sold on Amazon, it's booming, right? Sure. So e-commerce is one of those areas. Anytime we have a crisis like this and we have a shift in the economy, we have to look at where is it shifting toward. Right. I didn't even tell you, Buck. I mean, you were gracious enough to speak at our CPA conference just a week or two ago. And we had twice as many people as we expected. And a lot of that's because we were doing it virtually. Right. Sure. I'm finding on my own webinars that the attendance is double what it used to be. So I think that we're finding certain segments of the economy that are doing better. And of course, the bricks and mortar, the other one's really struggling. It's really the bricks and mortar. I even, let me give you an interesting example of a client that owns a microbrewery and in Georgia. And Georgia, of course, is one of the first ones to open, right? And, but in April, Georgia was closed like everybody else. They did fine.
Yeah.
And the reason they did is because one of their goals was to be able to sell it in bottles. So they bottled it. So all they did was they just stepped up their bottling. Whereas I know restaurant owners here in Phoenix where they sold it on tap and that's what they sold. Well, they were practically giving it away because they had so much beer that was just sitting there. And, you know, beer goes flat. So, you know, that doesn't keep forever. So they were really concerned about it. Whereas my client in the microbrewery, because they'd made that one little shift to be able to bottle it and they do their own bottling, they were able to bottle it and they had a carry out window and drive up carry out window and they were able to do that. So, you know, those businesses that are adapting, man, it's just amazing how well they're doing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It makes me think, Tom, too, and from the standpoint of what I'm hearing about from investors and their how things are performing for them. I mean, people who are invested in real estate and office and retail are getting killed. Even people who are doing Class A or new construction, multifamily, are not doing nearly as well as like working class, you know, because working class, I mean, shoot, with the unemployment right now, I mean, if they're unemployed, they're making more money than they did when they were employed. So, you know, so those assets seem to be performing really, really well, oddly enough. So there is this kind of winners and losers scenario going on with this thing. One last question for you, though, which is, you know, obviously, you know, you talked about how the IRS kind of gets sticky hands and tries to, you know, get their piece in all of this. Do you foresee any additional legislation this year to potentially try to recover some of the lost revenues from the more affluent, for example, you know, stronger restrictions on perceived tax shelters, you know, like conservation easements and things like that? Do you see crackdowns or do you see anything like that on the horizon? What do you think?
I think the crackdowns are going to come directly from the IRS. We're already seeing it. You know, anybody who has a small captive got a nasty gram from the IRS in March, just as the pandemic was hitting its stride, totally unethical letter, but nevertheless, because you're the IRS, you can send out whatever you want. And so, you know, we did see that. And basically they said, if you don't give up your deduction, your legitimate deduction, we're going to come out at you. And we're going to basically 800 pound gorilla sitting on your head, right? So that was their message in that. We had a notice last fall that they were looking at auditing the owners of a conservation easement. The owners, not the partnership, which is where the valuation was done, where everything came in, but the actual partners in it, who really had nothing to do with that valuation, only deciding that I'm going to make this.
I mean, how could they even do that? Isn't that kind of like a?
Well, they can audit you. So here's, I think I figured out where this notice, what they're thinking from the notice. Well,
it's scary. It's
speculation, but it's speculation based on 40 years of experience.
Right.
So my speculation is that they're concerned they don't know about them. Mm-hmm. So there's a form, there's this form where you have to disclose this type of an investment that basically it has some tax shelter aspects to it called the Form 8886. And I think they're quite concerned that a lot of people are not reporting on that form. And if you don't use that form, by the way, you have huge penalties if they catch you, right? So you have to disclose this. And I actually think that's what they were getting at, they were getting after with that letter from the IRS in March was, look, you need to disclose this. And if you don't disclose it, we're going to audit you.
Right.
Okay. Because we want to make sure you've got it. Well, they already know you have it if you've got an 8886, right? So there's been no reason for them to audit you if they look at your 8886 and in a conservation easement and also your 8283, which is the charitable portion of that, and they see that it's proper. Okay. That may be the only audit you get. And it may just be a correspondence audit. You might just get a letter.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that the IRS is absolutely going to step up its audits. Okay. It's got more money, you know, it was given more money. A couple of times in the last couple of years, it's gotten, you know, increases in funding. And so I do think we're going to see more examinations, you know, more aggressive behavior from that standpoint. But the reality is that you should never be taking a position that you're not comfortable defending.
Yeah.
And you should, if you have a CPA who's not comfortable defending you, you need a new CPA.
So. Yeah. And that brings me ultimately to, you know, where we'll leave it, which is, listen, folks, there are there's a lot of information here. There's also lots of, you know, even what we're talking about with captives and some of these other things. If you're in good hands, I mean, you can feel a lot more comfortable. You know, if your CPA is comfortable with things and feels like, you know, you're not doing anything wrong, you can do more stuff than with somebody who's scared and just says, I don't know what that is. And, you know, and you can't do that. And, you know, all that stuff, which everybody hears all the time. So I want to encourage people. We have a lot of our listeners who are already working with CPAs in the Wealth Ability Network, which is Tom's network. Again, that's wealthability.com. Tom, anything else to add?
Yeah. So we actually call this the sleep at night test.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're not sleeping at night because of something to do with your taxes, then please call us and whatever we can do for you. Even if it's not matching you up, even if your situation doesn't call for what we're doing, we'll still help you any way we can. So we're just happy to, we think this is the time to really be rendering service and really, you know, from an educational standpoint and anything we can do, we'd like to do that. But do make sure what I've learned, number one thing I've learned out of this whole crisis is it's all about your team, right? As Kiyosaki's always saying, business is a team sport, investing is a team sport. And when you have a good team, it's like, you know, whether it's investing in multifamily housing, there are syndicators struggling right now because they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't do a good job. And they're going to be struggling even more once that unemployment check goes away.
Right.
So this is a time when having the right people on your team is probably more important than what you know is who you know.
That's right. Tom, I want to thank you again for being on Wealth Formula Podcast. As always, is a pleasure, my good friend, Tom Wheelwright.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Buck.
You're right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hope you enjoy that. Tom is a very, very smart guy. And I just want to reiterate that, you know, hopefully, even if you're not a business person, you know, business owner, that you are listening closely to this stuff, because I think it's very difficult. You know, if you're not involved with, you know, having employees, you know, looking for customers and all that kind of stuff to really understand the implications of what's going on. So the tax laws obviously are, you know, always trying to create incentives for the economy. So when you see what the government is doing, you can get a sense for what is reality in the economy rather than just looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average going up every day. Well, that is it for me this week. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. This is Buck Joffrey with Wealth Formula Podcast signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Save You with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.